Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here and Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend show. Also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com. We are focusing a lot on, again, these stocks, especially in the resource sector. And throughout the week, some of the other sectors that caught our eye in this weekend show. We are kicking off with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Jesse, we're going to revisit a couple of your articles that you've released to subscribers over the last few weeks. The first one breaks down the underperformance and why you think the bang stock, so that is the large gold miners, Barrick, Agnico, Newmont, Goldcorp. These stocks to you look interesting and look attractive. You recommended this trade a couple years ago, and it actually worked out quite well for you. But now we've seen such a disconnect between the gold price and these stocks, especially after these stocks have sold off so much, that you're back to thinking this is a trade that is, again, an attractive one. Jesse, break down why now and, again, why you like the bang stocks, please.
Well, there's, you know, two, you know, primary driving factors. One is, you know, where's the gold price going? And I think a lot of people have given up on gold over the past year, and it's not hard to see why. Gold prices peaked over a year ago and have been in correction ever since. But as we've talked consistently, Corey, gold is very closely related to real rates. And you know, I've explained to your audience several times, I look at the 30-year yield less core CPI. Now, some people might argue that's not, you know, real rates, but market implied real rates through the TIPS market have been manipulated by the Fed. So I prefer to look at this measure. And a year ago, it said that, you know, gold had gotten way ahead of where real rates suggested it should be, and that it was time for a correction. But now the message is exactly the opposite. Even though nominal rates have been rising, inflation has been rising much, much faster over the past several months. I think we've seen, you know, CPI over 5% for 3 or 4 months straight, and it's only going to go higher. I think markets are pricing in a 6% print before the end of the year right now. And so, you know, basically, rates are negative to the tune of, you know, 300, 400 basis points, which should be extremely positive for the gold price. But investors have really, you know, given up on it. You see, whether you look at things like ETF assets, which have, you know, declined pretty significantly over the past year for gold ETFs, the futures market, you know, small speculators have been abandoning gold and silver. To me, that's a very positive sign. But it's probably nowhere more evident than in the market for the miners. I mean, these stocks are trading at, you know, 5, 6, 7 times enterprise value to EBITDA, which tells me that people think the gold cycle's over. That, you know, with cyclical type stocks, you usually find that they trade at low multiples near the top of the cycle because people discount the fact that earnings are probably inflated and going to roll over. I don't think that's the case for these stocks. I think gold's probably just basing before another major move higher. And if that's the case, investors are going to have to reconcile the fact that these things trade as if it's the top of the cycle. If gold prices push to new highs, these stocks are going to have a lot of catching up to do. And that's kind of one of the shorts that the charts that I indicated. When you see the relative performance of gold miners versus the gold price, you know, they perform terribly. And, you know, there's, like I said, there's a lot of catching up to do. And, you know, if, you know, gold prices, like I said, push higher and the gold miners need to do that catching up, they're going to outperform to the upside by multiples, many multiples of the gold price. So to me, it's very exciting that sentiment and fundamentals are lining up in a very bullish fashion for the major mining stocks right now.
Well, Jesse, you set the table well there. Yeah, it's interesting with such a negative real rate environment that gold hasn't done as as well as many people would have expected. But then the mining stocks themselves, as you point out, have even underperformed that. So there's a lot of reversion to the mean. You had an interesting chart on here as well on your article, the long-term gold analog. And you're comparing today's gold price to the gold price movement from the 1995 to 2007 cycle. Just walk us through, you know, do you expect us to see that kind of large increase in the gold price here over, you know, the next 2 years, like you show on that analog chart? And what do you think the driver could be? Would it be Fed policy and the taper and the rate hike cycle that they expect over the next year that drives that? Or what do you think the catalyst would be?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, Shad. This is a price analog that I've been using for, you know, basically since the gold price bottomed in late 15, early 16. And I'm surprised that it keeps working, but it does. It's got a, you know, there's a greater than 90% correlation with the current net bull market and the one that we saw when, you know, prices bottomed 20 years ago. And, you know, if you know, his past is going to be prologue still, this analog is going to keep working. It suggests that the gold price is getting ready to just explode higher over the next couple of quarters. Now, what would be the catalyst for that? And I think, you know, this it's a good point to talk about Fed policy, because I think that's why negative real rates are not really supporting gold prices today, because most investors look at this environment. My friend Tom McClellan has done a lot of good work on this, where he points out that gold typically responds to negative real rates, but it doesn't when it blows out to extremes, because the market begins to price in a tightening cycle. And I think that's what the market's pricing in with gold right now, is you don't want to fight the Fed. If the Fed is going to raise interest rates and start fighting inflation, then it's not a great time to own gold. But if you believe, as I do, that the Fed is not going to be able to tighten policy in the way that they need to, then gold is going to explode higher. So to me, it really comes back to, do you believe the Fed is going to tighten policy? I mean, you look at like the Taylor rule, you know, would suggest the Fed funds rate needs to be hundreds of basis points higher than it is currently today. I mean, probably talking 300, 400, 500 basis points versus 0% where it is today. So if you believe the Fed is going to have the ability to tighten policy that to that degree, which means tapering asset purchases from 120 billion to zero, and raise interest rates enough to fight inflation, then you probably don't want to own gold. But if you believe that the Fed's going to have a hard time doing that without crashing the stock market and without crashing the economy, and they're going to be forced to turn their attention again to the other side of the dual mandate, which is protecting employment. And I think they've told us for the last couple of years now that their bias is going to be towards that side of the dual mandate, protecting employment rather than fighting inflation. If you believe they're going to have to do that, then they're going to have to let inflation go. They're going to have to sacrifice that side of the dual mandate. And that's when gold really goes nuts. And I think that's what we're going to see over the next few months. I think they're trying to use, you know, forward guidance right now in place of actual policy. They're talking about threatening to taper, and they probably will taper to a degree, and then raising interest rates to let the market do those things for them, because I don't think there's any way that they're going to be able to taper completely. The Treasury market's just way too big now and can't really function without them intervening permanently, probably for the rest of our lifetimes. And the market just can't handle higher interest rates. The government can't handle it. The mortgage market, the real estate market can't handle it. And, you know, the corporate bond market can't handle higher interest rates. We're just too leveraged. And so when the Fed chickens out, gold price is going to explode higher.
So, Jesse, I think you're absolutely right that a lot of these gold bulls that are making comparisons to the 90s or even back to the 70s, they are in a way ignoring just how heavy of a hand the Fed has in the markets right now, especially. But then it comes down to time frame, right? And you even said in the next couple months, the market might start to realize that the Fed won't be able to tighten the way that they're talking the markets to. But if you talk to some technicians, and some of the even better technicians that we have on the show, they've pointed to more next year, even later next year is when the market might wake up to that Why do you think it'll happen sooner in the next couple months rather than later next year?
Well, this is something that we started to, I mean, just look at the Atlanta Fed GDP Now forecast. It started at 6%. It's now down to 0.5% growth, estimated growth for Q3. And if you think, and the economy is slowing dramatically, another thing that I look at is, you know, I have a forward leading indicator for earnings growth for the S&P 500. And right now, it's pointing to a massive earnings recession in 2022 for the S&P 500. And this is just comprised of oil prices, interest rates, and the dollar. And when these three things all go up together, about 2 years later, you get a pretty significant earnings recession. Interest rates bottomed well over a year ago and have been rising significantly since then. Oil prices are screaming higher, and the dollar's been pretty strong over the last year. So I think, you know, all of those signs point to a pretty significant earnings recession in 2022 sometime. The stock market usually starts to discount that 6 to 12 months in advance. And so to me, I'm looking at that and saying, well, that's right about now when the stock market should start discounting that. So I think the bond market is already testing the Fed's resolve to taper. If interest rates keep going up, the Fed is going to be hard pressed to really follow through on the taper. I think a lot of people forget in the repo fiasco in 2019, well before we printed $4 trillion of new debt was issued, to combat the economic slowdown of the COVID economic recession. But the Treasury market basically stopped functioning without the Fed's intervention. And so the Fed had to come in 2019 and intervene just to basically protect the market in Treasury bills. Now that we have, you know, issued $4 trillion of new debt, to think that the Treasury market's going to function without the Fed, I think is hopeful at best and ridiculous, in my opinion. The Fed's not going to be able to, especially if they're tapering and then going to start raising interest rates into a pretty severe economic slowdown. The pressure on the central bank to quit is going to be severe, politically speaking. I mean, I think there's already politicians right now that are upset with the fact that they're talking about tapering this early into an economic recovery. So, I think they're going to probably start to taper this year. They might taper November, December, and get maybe in a couple of months into next year before it's really obvious the economy is slowing and the Fed's not able to follow through on their current trajectory.
Yeah, Jesse, it's an interesting soup of different ingredients here coming together, because the inflation, as you mentioned, as you quipped in a recent article, ended up not being transitory. You've got the oil prices racing higher, as you just mentioned, which often are a precursor to a market correction or sometimes even a recession. And then you had an interesting article out maybe 2 months ago talking about the market breadth. And maybe you could reference that too, because a lot of people believe for the gold and silver market and the precious metals to take off, there needs to be a reason for them to exit some of their positions in the general markets. And, you've been good at tracking the Hindenburg omens and the market breadth. But do you think it would be something where we'd have to see a little bit of shaking of the tree in the general markets to get people focused on the precious metals for that big leg you expect?
Yeah, so you mentioned the Hindenburg omen. That's something that I track, and it's kind of really, it's gotten a bad reputation because it was created as an indicator that would point to a crash in the stock market. And I think that, you know, that's not the way it should be used. Basically, to me, I look at it as a breadth warning, and one indicator itself is probably not enough to be really concerned about markets. But when you see a number of indicators triggered over a specific time frame, that's enough to start being concerned about market breadth. So basically, a Hindenburg omen is triggered when stocks are at or near new 52-week highs. But you have not just the individual highs within the index, the number of new highs within the components over a threshold. I think it's 2% of components, 2.5% of components, something like that. But you also have new lows rising significantly too, also over that same threshold. So that's basically just an indicator of dispersion. When you have a market that's hitting new highs, most of a healthy market should see most of its components hitting new highs. You can look at you know, percent of stocks over a 50-day moving average, those types of things are also effective breadth indicators. But when you see a number of new stocks hitting new lows, even as the market's hitting new highs, that is a warning that there are a bunch of stocks potentially under the surface that aren't working together to power the market higher, and they're actually reversing the other direction. And over in the NASDAQ, basically this year, I think we've seen 10 or 11 Hindenburg omens triggered over a 6-month period, which in the past has indicated that breadth is unhealthy for that that index. We've had a few in the NYSE also, but they've been mostly focused in the NASDAQ. And I think this is because interest rates have been going up, and you see that, you know, growth stocks tend to suffer when interest rates rise. Value stocks tend to do better. And so I think that's probably why we're seeing more, as interest rates rise, more breadth dispersions in the NASDAQ. Now, I do think people are probably right to be looking for a correction in the stock market as a potential trigger for the bull market in gold. Because, as I said, the markets are going to test the Fed. The bond market's already starting to test the Fed. As soon as they started talking about tapering, we saw nominal rates start rising again. And I think that's, you know, the market is going to, like I said, test the Fed's resolve in their willingness to remove accommodative policy. The stock market, I think, is also going to test the Fed. The stock market is going to roll over into correction. And if 2018 was representative of Jay Powell's resolve in tightening policy, then we're going to get to a point, whether it's 10% or 20% down, where the Fed capitulates and says, we can't afford to let the market, the stock market, roll over. I think that's probably what we're headed for, is if the Fed is going to continue talking about a taper, the markets are going to realize we no longer have the Fed asset purchases as support, and the markets are going to roll over. And this thing's happening all at the same time with, like I said, this forward, or this earnings recession that's probably in the cards. And so you pair removal of central bank support with an earnings slowdown or recession, and it's a recipe for a correction. I think if that correction could be the thing that forces Jay Powell's hand in saying, okay, we're going to stop tapering, or we're going to at least slow this trajectory of removing accommodative policy. And at that point, as soon as the market sniffs that out, that's when gold starts to just scream higher.
So Jesse, going down this narrative then of when the market does wake up and when the Fed does capitulate from this more hawkish talk that they have, where is that money going to go? Because quite frankly, there seems to be so much liquidity in these markets with, it seems like, investors and traders not wanting to diversify out of the markets, that even with weak breadth, the money is still staying within the financial markets. So where in your eyes would it shift to?
You know, that's a good question. I think that there's kind of this misunderstanding a lot of times with, you know, with a bear market in stocks. I think if you look back to the previous two, it's hard to see money shifting anywhere. I think a lot of times money just evaporates. You know, people like to think, okay, well, people are selling stocks, that the funds have to go somewhere. Yes and no. I mean, I think if you look at the NASDAQ crash after 2000, the 2000 peak, and there are a lot of similarities between today and that time in terms of sentiment rolling over and things. But I think you look at people who were the day traders and things who were invested back then during that mania, and those funds were just evaporated. It didn't go into other things. Why I think gold is going to take off, though, is I think institutional investors are going to have to realize, and I think they already are. If you look at that Bank of America survey that came out this week, they're starting to buy energy stocks. And that was one that a year ago I was just pounding the table bullish on energy. We talked about it, I think, a couple of times, Corey. And now they're starting to embrace this sector as, you know, hey, look, if inflation is not transitory and it's here, we have to shift portfolios in a way that are going to protect us from it, because the Fed is not going to protect us from it. And I think if institutional investors continue to come around to this idea then the natural basically safe haven for that is precious metals. And I'm as you know, even more excited about silver than I am about gold right now, because I think silver is just incredibly cheap relative to gold. And it's kind of like, you know, the high beta precious metal. I think when institutional investors are forced to reconcile themselves with this idea that inflation is here, that we've seen a shift from disinflation that's lasted for 40 years to a new inflationary regime, and the Fed's doesn't have the ability to really, you know, rein it in. You have to have a minimum allocation to precious metals, and they're just so under-owned that there is going to be a shift in that direction. Now, I don't think it's going to be, you know, coming out of stocks and going in there. I just think there's so much cash. I mean, there's trillions of dollars in just cash right now that has to go somewhere. And I think, you know, that cash is probably over the next year or two going to be shifted towards an overweight in precious metals from a dramatic underweight today.
That's an interesting point, Jesse, that it doesn't necessarily have to be a rotation out of the markets into the precious metals. It could be a rotation out of a cash sitting on the sidelines and into the precious metals. Just one more question. You brought up energy there. There's no doubt that you were spot on that the oil prices have surged, energy prices and nat gas have surged, pulled back a little bit recently. But we've also seen a lot of the other commodities, the base metals and the agricultural commodities take off. Like copper's up near an all-time high. We've seen nickel racing. Zinc prices are at an all-time high. So do you think we are still in an early stage of this commodity cycle where there's more room for them to run with the inflationary backdrop, or have things gotten a little bit ahead of themselves when you look at the commodity sector as a whole?
Well, I think actually both of those things are true. I mean, it's my opinion that we are still in a long-term bull market for commodities, but it's also true that they're probably overbought right now and potentially due for a correction. You look at commodities index, the Bloomberg commodities index and things, and they're all hitting new highs, which to me, that was the signal that inflation's not transitory. When you see, I mean, one of my favorite quotes from Paul Tudor Jones, when you see something, you know, break out of a range, it's a loud, clear signal that it's about to move further in that direction. It's basically just telling you that a breakout is a bullish thing. And that's exactly what we're seeing in commodities today. They're breaking out to new record highs across the board in almost any measure that you look at. There couldn't be a more bullish signal than that for commodities and for inflation. To me, that tells you inflation is here to stay. But having said that, I do think they are getting overbought. They're getting a little bit, investors are getting a little bit over bullish towards them. They could correct for a time. I think, you know, oil prices are probably the ones that are the one that's most important to look at. And to me, yeah, oil just broke an important downtrend line that I wrote about. It's the downtrend line that goes back to the 2008 peak. Oil prices essentially been in a long-term bear market since then. But in October, they broke above that downtrend line for the first time in, 13 years. To me, that's extremely bullish for oil prices. But what you see a lot of times with breakouts is, you know, price breaks out to a new high, then it falls back to test the breakout. And I think that's probably what we're going to see in oil prices, commodity prices generally, is a correction, you know, beginning at any day, you know, any time right now. And so I'm still long-term bullish, but I do think they need to correct in the short run.
All right, Jesse, we're going to wrap it up here. It's always great chatting with you and always enjoyable reading over your articles over at the Felder Report. We appreciate you taking some time with us on this weekend show, and sounds like we're all just waiting to see when the market does wake up to the fact that the Fed won't be able to go through with all the hawkishness that they've been talking, but that's also on the Fed to start capitulating as well and to actually start tightening. Let's remember they haven't even started yet. Jesse, thanks as always for your time, buddy. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
You too, guys. Thanks for having me.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Jesse Felder. In the next two segments, we are joined by Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail side, he writes the In the Know Trader, as well as a relatively newer piece called 7-Eleven, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the overall S&P. And Rick, we're going to start with the U.S. equity markets, because we had you back on about a month ago, and you were sharing with your clients your outlook for the markets to broadly move sideways for really Q4. And quite frankly, we had a little bit of a dip in the markets, and then about a 5% sell-off, and then some buying came back in. It still seems like that buy the dip mentality is on or still in traders' minds. However, we reached those all-time highs and in a way have reversed. Now, we just reversed a little bit on Friday, but still it doesn't seem like there's that same momentum to the upside, also not huge momentum to the downside. So, Rick, where does that leave us for the U.S. equity markets right now?
Well, Corey, thanks for having me. I think it leaves us kind of where I thought we'd be a month ago, which is fairly sideways. You're right. There's some, you know, we've had a quick move up in the last 2 weeks, but all we've done is we made an incremental new high yesterday or even this morning. I think Friday morning made a slight new high. And it's pulled back, and you know, we're towards the upper part of the range. And I said that if we made new highs, I don't think we'd get much more than a percent or two above what were the prior all-time highs, such that the S&P, you know, okay, so maybe you get to 4,600, 4,650, let's say best case. That's roughly 2% above what was the all-time high from early September. And on the downside, I don't see that we're likely going to make any material move to the downside. We got down to just under 4,300 before rebounding, basically at the beginning, since the beginning of October. So, you know, the market made its high at the beginning of September, sold down for the month of September. Now we've rallied the entire month of October, right back to those highs. I kind of think we're going to be somewhat in this sideways fashion. And for the next couple months, and what it's going to do is frustrate those who have firmly gone in the camps of some of these major Wall Street firms. So I think 5 or 6 tier one firms had called for a 15 to 20% decline. And we got 5.5% in the S&P, and it's come right back up. You've got a couple of firms, including, I think, Goldman and maybe Bank of Montreal or something, where you have really bullish strategists who still think we're going out this year at 4,700. I don't do a year-end type target, but I'm just going to pick that we're somewhere in between. I don't know if I'll self-impose a number on me. I'll just pick the middle of the range and say, 4,400. 4,500, somewhere in there, which is going to be somewhat sideways, because the issues that plagued the market a month ago are not gone. So we sold off, and then, you know, all of a sudden people thought that, all right, well, the Fed's not going to do their tapering as quickly, and now they're giving us a little more clarity on it. But I don't think things are all that good that we're going to just keep pushing higher here. So I think the market still has issues to deal with. We're going into, look, we're late October at this point, based on history and what are the medical professionals tell us, the COVID virus should get worse as we enter winter. You know, the heat of the summer is over, and the heat helps kill viruses. And, you know, it's just very common to get viruses get worse as you get closer to and into the winter. So we still have that to deal with. We have high energy prices to deal with. We have supply chain issues to deal with. We have companies telling us that, you know, they're not able to get their hands on the goods. There's shipping containers sitting outside of ports that can't get into ports. That means those shipping containers also can't get back to, let's say, China and other places that they originated from to to bring new product over. So I think there's still some general macro issues. You have higher interest rates to deal with. Technology stocks don't usually do as well as interest rates move up. And, you know, we're certainly nearer the higher level of rates for the year than we are towards the lower end. You know, the U.S. 10-year is at 1.65% or so, with a high this year at 1.76. But just, you know, over the summer, we got down to 1.11. So we're near the higher end. There's just things that the market needs to contend with. And I kind of think we're going to be a little mishmashy for a few months. And that's not a bad thing in an ongoing bull market, is to go sideways for a little bit. It just kind of cleans out the ranks a little in either direction. And you got to be a confirmed bull over longer periods to hold on. Otherwise, you know, tactical traders are doing decently now. But if you get married to the idea that the market's going to sell off 20% or that it's going to rally another 10% by year's end, I think you're going to be very disappointed. So that's my general call, is somewhat sideways action.
Well, Rick, do you think earnings season will play a part here in this continual tug of war between the bulls and the bears? Because we've seen some companies kind of get pummeled if they miss their guidance. And if people are expecting things to break out to a high new level, could that be something that puts a lid on it? Or could some other companies, as they report, lead the sector higher? What's your outlook as far as we're in the middle of earnings
season?
Well,
look, earnings are what drive the markets over time. They're the biggest force behind price moving over time. It's kind of irrelevant for traders unless they're literally playing an immediate earnings release. But, you know, earnings are very important, as is the Fed. And earnings have started off decently. But as you say, Chad, if you miss, I mean, look at what, you know, Snap was down 30% at one point right after the bell yesterday after they released earnings. And last I looked, I don't know, maybe they're only down like 22% or something like that now. But, you know, that's a plunking. If you're a portfolio manager and in a single day you're down over 20%, of course, there's only one name in your portfolio. But, you know, that's a hit. We saw IBM miss and drop, 8 to 10%. What else came out? You know, Intel got whacked. So you gotta match your numbers, and so many stocks do better than the numbers because analysts are almost always too conservative, you know, in their estimates. And that's kind of just a phenomena on the sell side, where you'd rather be under, and you know, you'd rather put out numbers that are kind of lower than you might think, because on a consensus basis, then it's easier to beat the consensus for the company, to beat the consensus number, and then have their stocks move higher. They're usually conservative, and yet you've got these surprises. In fact, even if I remember correctly, when I saw this yesterday and Snap missed, some of the business TV networks had on analysts from a variety of different sell-side firms who cover Snap, and they all defended the name as saying this is a big overreaction, and this is a great buying opportunity, and da 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 da. When all of them say the same thing, I kind of think like, no, they're all trapped in being too bullish. So I'm not sure this recoups this type decline anytime soon. But I even personally put in a bid for it, but it was worse than even 30% down. So, you know, it was even lower than that. So I figured, you know, let's see if there's some real pain, which we're not seeing at least today, relative to where it'd been yesterday after the close. But I'm in no rush here. I like to take advantage and try to buy things when people just can't take the pain anymore of holding it from higher prices. So look, earnings are big. Generally, they've been okay, but you don't want to be on the wrong side of a miss.
So Rick, in summary then, before we leave these U.S. markets, what matters the most in your eyes? Is it the Fed and their upcoming meeting early November? It keeps getting talked about. Is it COVID and the potential spike in cases, or at least the government's reaction to those spike in cases? Or is it even energy prices or economic data? Both have also moved markets in the near term.
Can I answer yes? I think those issues are the predominant key issues, and it's not necessarily one greater than the other right now. the Fed has so telegraphed what they're doing, although it's more recent that they've gotten clear. And I think Chairman Powell also is going to be a lot more reticent in his previous comments of transitory inflation. I think the marketplace has known for quite some time and has positioned themselves for quite some time that inflation is not going to be transitory. And I don't know if Chairman Powell was just kind of trying to be like a little double talk with like Greenspan-esque and not necessarily come out and say, you know, look, he's not in a position where he could come out and say, yeah, inflation is here and it's going to get a heck of a lot worse, folks. So prepare for it. You know, he can't say it that way. So I don't necessarily agree that he had chosen terms transitory unless he really believed it and now is starting to change his mind. But investors are positioned, and even more so over the last week, that it's not going to be transitory. There is there are more people being bearish bonds than bullish bonds, which makes sense after a 30-year bull market that is clearly now over. And I'm hard-pressed to think that yields in the U.S., you know, the 10-year yield gets under 1% again. And after 30 years of having moved significantly lower, the base is building for rates to go higher. And I'm not talking about having a 5 or 7% U.S. 10-year, but in the next few years, is there any reason we couldn't get to 2.5%, even 3 to 3.5%? No, not at all. Is there any reason we'd likely get to test the lows that we saw from summer 2020 down at, you know, 40 basis points? I don't think there's anything left in the pot to make rates go there anymore. So the recent low was at, I think it was 1.11%. Could something happen that we've been too oversold bonds near term and rates, you know, pull back down and bond prices go back up? Possibly, but at this point, I don't think so. And for the larger picture of what's going on, I think it just makes more sense to think that if you're playing the odds of bond movement going forward over the next several years, the likelihood is that yields move up, not that yields move down.
I was going to ask you about that, Rick, because, you know, if the yields are stuck in, let's say, between 1% and 2% right now, it's really not much when you consider the CPI inflation's around 5%, and even the tips is more than that. So people that are buying U.S. Treasuries for a return, you know, generalist investors, they're not going to be that excited about the returns in bonds because you're getting eroded by inflation. So what sectors are you interested in? Where do you think some of that money may rotate into?
So if you finally get the end of the bull market that started in, you know, let's just call it 1980, when yields were, I don't know, what, on the 10-year, 15%, give or take, something like that, I think that the money, as individual investors walk away from the bond market and have cash, they're either going to sit with the cash, of which some will probably make its way into the equity market. Some will probably make its way into crypto as crypto gets marketed better. And, you know, you get the price of this crazy thing called Bitcoin that, you know, just made another all-time high a few days ago before giving back, I don't know, $7,000 or something in the last few days. It's so those are some places. And thinking as far as traditional stuff, maybe gold gets a little, although gold's just been a huge disappointment. It's basically the only major commodity that has not rallied. You know, gold and silver are down on the year. And you look at the commodity index and it's up nicely and surging, and you know, the precious metals are not partaking. So maybe a little of it trickles, you know, back into the commodity space. I think energy, because of its such a long-term underperformance, is probably a very under-owned sector of the stock market. So I think there's probably going to be investment in that area, both in the stocks, but in general, I think kind of energy gets back infrastructure, investment, and you know, you got clean energy that's all becoming a part of the new way of looking at energy. And I'm not saying that conventional old-time energy is gone, but it's you know, slowly being taken away as the public is asking for and kind of demanding cleaner ways. So when you have companies like Ford saying that you know, they're ultimately going full electric cars, and other ones following suit, it's they're still all different new things that are going to get developed in the energy area. So that's a place I think that is probably worthy of investing in, kind of finally. So if you look at the XLE versus the spiders, 20-year picture, the only sector of the 11 sectors you're going to lose money in is energy. I mean, you've actually lost money in a 20-year investment. So if you go back to 2000 to now, if you were invested in the XLE, you've lost money. I think finally, energy is a place that it's likely bottomed, and that it is a place that is going to get investment over time. So that's a few places that I think that some of the bond money is going to come out of. And look, bonds are going to always be needed to be owned by pension plans, by insurance companies, by corporations that need to have a guaranteed stream that they know is fixed, so that they can do their proper treasury workings to know what's coming in, what's going out, and at least guarantee a certain amount with a fixed stream. But for the everyday investor, the moms and pops, you know, across America, owning, locking yourself in to get 1 point, you know, now it's, let's say one round number is 1.7%, and locking that for 10 years when inflation is running higher than that, when the chances are that bond prices move down as being greater than bond prices moving up, such that you're going to lose money holding that bond. If you need to sell it, especially if you need to sell it before it matures, you know, you're guaranteed the price at maturity, but in between, if yields move higher, your bond price goes down. I don't think there's a huge reason to be owning bonds. And I've said that whether it's 1.7 or even at 1%, it's just, there's a time and place for everything. So I think also the standard 60-40 formula that has worked on Wall Street for so long, put people basically 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds. And as they get older, you know, shift that more into bonds and less to stocks. I think that formula is going out the window, because, you know, owning bonds just isn't going to do people a heck of a lot of good.
Well, it's been a really historic run that bonds went on, right? And one could say there were a lot of other hands in that run, too, with what the central banks were doing. But, Rick, I want to revisit one of your comments there on gold and silver as being really the only commodity, or one of the only commodities, that is down this year. And that's in an environment, too, where we are seeing higher inflation, let's say negative real interest rates. There are still some worries in the world and globally. That being said, we also seem to be going through an economic recovery. Why has gold and silver lagged so much? And is this part of a bigger picture? We almost need to think of gold and silver in a different way. Is that possible?
Well, so one is that gold used to be, you know, you put some gold, a little bit of your money into gold as a hedge against inflation, as a non-correlated asset. And in theory, there's still reasons to think that way. But a few years back, this thing called crypto showed up, and you actually did decently in gold up until, I guess, it peaked August of last summer. So up until a year ago, you know, long-term holders have done well. And even though gold gave back a few hundred dollars, right now it's kind of in the middle of the range since it peaked at just shy of 2,100. Right now it's about 1,800. And so gold really has some competition in kind of the alternative asset space, in the hard asset space. Cryptos have been on fire. So, you know, anybody who bought cryptos is making money and almost easily doing it, as long as you didn't have the worst of timings. So if you just held for, 6 months, you probably made money. I'm not sure if crypto had more than a 6 month decline, and it's had some nasty ones along the way, but you know, they don't last much more than 6 months or so, give or take. So gold has some competition, and inflation was low up until recently. So gold wasn't giving you a heck of a lot that way as being an inflation hedge. You didn't need it because there was no inflation. Now we're seeing some inflation, but people have been turned off by the fact that gold's done nothing this year, and in a year that the S&P is up nicely, that crypto's up very nicely. So, but you know, part of, and don't forget too, the dollar has basically been up the bulk of this year. If you look at it year to date, the dollar bottomed the first week of 2021. So the dollar's been up, and only a week or two ago, it made its high for the year. So a rallying dollar is bearish for gold because gold is priced in U.S. dollars. So if you don't live in the U.S., anywhere else you're buying gold, you're essentially, in theory, buying it versus a U.S. dollar because you need to buy dollars to buy gold. And it's the type of thing that because the dollars move higher, it makes gold more expensive, and therefore that's a drag on the price of gold. There's just higher interest rates is a drag on the price of gold. Because now it's an alternative, you know, getting yield versus, you have to remember, gold yields nothing. It has no value other than what human beings have assigned to it. And there's no dividend when you hold, you know, when you hold gold bars, there's no dividend. When you own gold, there's just no dividend. So there's other things that give you a return. As interest rates go higher, people say, I can, you know, lock in some money and get something for my cash, whereas gold, the only way I'm going to make money in gold is if the price of gold goes higher. There's no other incentive. Plenty of people buy stocks for their dividends, and they're very happy to get paid a 4 or 5% dividend. Even if the stock goes nowhere, they've made 4 or 5% a year just from that dividend check. So gold has a lot of things that don't work for it. But the long-term fundamentals for gold are actually still there. There's still, you know, all the problems with growing debt that countries have on a global basis, and that is not good for any local currency, whether it's U.S. dollars or euros or any other currency. So, I think people are looking at crypto as, you know, an alternative currency that theoretically has good fundamentals, given the limit of how many Bitcoins can be, if we want to use Bitcoin as the example, because it's the largest, most liquid, because there's a limit to how many, you know, Bitcoins can ever be mined. So it's very different than a U.S. dollar that a treasury can just print more or a central bank can just print more. And it's really comes down to, I think, that gold has competition finally.
That's a very good point to wrap it up, because gold does have competition, and that competition has also captured the attention of the younger generation that has much more so just in the last couple of years truly entered this market. Rick, it's always great having you on the show. And look, some very interesting comments regarding where the U.S. markets could go for the rest of this year, which might be nowhere, and where that money will rotate out of bonds when that continues to pick up steam, because it does seem like, and this is a global trend, yields are moving higher, and that means money is rotating out of the bond market, not just in the U.S. Rick, great chatting with you as always, buddy. Thank you for taking some time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend, and everybody, thank you for tuning in. Please keep the emails coming. Fleck@kereport.com and Shad@kereport.com. Please go back through our website over that last week and listen to all of the interviews and company updates that we released. Everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.